Good morning. Welcome to session 311. Remember, please no cell phones. All those logistical things, let's not spend a lot of time on. I just need to get my program out here. Our session is entitled Continuing Education in the Public Sphere, the Mainstreaming of the Mormon Image Through Public Relations. Our presenter today is Etgar Uger. Etgar is a PhD candidate in political science here at the University of Utah, where he also works as an adjunct instructor. His research interests include religion and politics, Islamic movements, and comparative government. Uger is currently working on a research project that examines religious groups in the United States and Turkey in terms of their public activism. His essays on religion, especially Islamic movements, have appeared in publications including Muslim Minority Affairs, New Perspectives on Turkey, and The Fountain magazine. Uger has taught classes on comparative politics, international relations, Middle East politics, and religion and politics in comparative perspective. He will be talking in particular about the LDS Church's public relations department. After Etgar's paper, we will have a response from Becky Johns, PhD, who is an associate professor in communications at Weber State University. So we'll turn the time to Etgar.
Thank you, Paul, for this introduction. First of all, I'd like to thank Becky and Paul for their understanding because of some communication problems. I was not able to give my paper beforehand to the respondent, so this is a work in progress, and I'd like to just acknowledge that she was kind enough to come here and to do her response on a kind of spontaneity basis. What I'm going to do today is I'd like to talk about the public relations of the LDS Church. Most of the times when the Mormons are on spot in the public sphere, in the media, it's about the perception of the Mormons by the general population. When we talk about the Mitt Romney candidacy, when we talk about the Winter Olympics, it's about how the Mormon image evolves in the eyes of the general public. Today, I'll kind of look at the other side of the coin, and I'll try to answer the question of what the church does as an institution in order to promote an image in the eyes of the American public and the world public as a whole. So what I'll try to answer today is what is the image that is being portrayed by the church as an institution, especially by its public affairs department? And as a general framework, this is a case study that I am doing in my thesis. I look at religious movements and how they use the public sphere. And I divide the public sphere into three main domains: the state, the political society, and the civil society. The state is where if some religious groups want to become part of legislation, if some religious groups dominate the bureaucracy and they hold the coercive power of the state, that is when I say this religious group utilizes the state level. So if there is law based on religion and religious thinking, then that is an example of a religious movement using the state level. The political society is when religious groups enter into politics, formal politics, by political parties, becoming part of coalitions, or supporting certain interest groups. And the civil society is where the church kind of assumes a moral leadership, provides social services, rather than being entangled, engaged in everyday formal politics. And my argument in the paper is that the LDS Church, from its beginning, has been using a combination of these three spheres of the public sphere. So let's quickly look at the history of LDS Church from this framework. Obviously, the beginning of LDS Church is an example of a community building. It's a new religion. It is new members. It's a very dynamic movement. And the movement mostly functions at the civil society level. And it's kind of a gated community. You have some unique beliefs. You have a solidarity and coherence and cohesion among the members. And it is kind of very isolated from the outside world. In the coming decades, when Mormons, as you know, faced persecution from outside, and there were tensions, especially political tensions, the Mormons also moved onto the political sphere, the political society, in order to become part of this power struggle. So we see the candidacy of Joseph Smith, or the attempted candidacy of Joseph Smith for the presidency. We have examples for being active at the local government level. And then there is the migration to Utah. This is kind of an example where the church becomes very active in all three spheres of the public sphere. The church has a council that is in charge of everyday affairs of the government. There is kind of a parallel government, or theodemocracy, if you will. The Brigham Young is the head of the state as well as being head of the church. And it kind of represents everything that is un-American in the mainstream public culture. It is not a secular state. It is not a secular system. There is no separation of church and state. There is a plural marriage. There is block voting when it comes to many political issues. And there is also economic communalism, as opposed to the whole idea of American free spirit and free enterprise, freedom of enterprise, and private property and free market economy. So this kind of brings the so-called Mormon question to the Congress, and obviously to the attention of the public as a whole. Then we have this tension, ongoing tension between the federal government and Utah, and it obviously ends by the first manifesto in 1890 by discontinuing the polygamy in Utah, and this is the turning point for Utah, or for the LDS Church, to withdraw from the state level. So the church is no longer trying to dominate or directly influence legislation or the bureaucracy or the police force. Rather, they are withdrawing from the state level, and they are also attempting to withdraw from the political society. There is the Mormon People's Party versus the liberals. And the church, after 1890, after the statehood was achieved, the church dissolves the People's Party and then kind of divides the members into Republicans and Democrats. So it is also an attempt to withdraw from the political society, but at the same time, the members are still interested in politics, especially the case of Senator Reed Smoot and his seating becomes an issue at the national level, and that's kind of a public trial for the Mormon Church. I think that's another turning point. The second manifesto comes in 1904 by Joseph F. Smith about their commitment to discontinuation and application of bigamy laws. And the 3-year public hearings on Senator Reed Smoot ends with kind of a victory for Mormons. He is seated in the Congress, and also a victory for the American political system as well, because the Mormons are kind of pushed towards the center, and they are forced to apply those American values in a more strong way. And after, you know, these turning points, we have the 20th century. The 20th century is about the LDS Church moving towards the civil society, kind of finding its source of legitimacy in providing social services, humanitarian aid, disaster relief, in offering moral leadership in public policy issues, and it tries to stay away from everyday politics and accepts this principle of political neutrality. So let's look at what the Public Affairs Department has been doing since its foundation. With the growth and diversity of the Mormon population, we have a need for a more organized way of communicating with the outside world. The first examples are kind of information booths that were found at the Temple Square for the tourists and the visitors. And later on, we have in 1970s a public affairs committee, first organized by Gordon B. Hinckley, and then the department was found in 1980s, you know, as a coherent, separate department. We have the Public Affairs Department. And in 1990s, the department takes another further step and even hires a New York-based public relations company to conduct its affairs in a more professional way. In general, the Office of Public Affairs is in charge of the relations of the church with the media and the society at large. It's a good source of contact for the media when they have questions, when they want to interview somebody from the church, when they want to learn about the position, official position of the church on various matters. And it's a good resource for even researchers, academic researchers. What I look at in the paper, as in terms of methodology, how I analyze the public sphere, is I look at the press releases that were issued by the Public Affairs Department. There are about 10 press releases on average each month. If you look at the last 10 years or so, that target both the audience, the members and non-members. And there is also the church website, which is becoming much more effective. There are features like the newsroom, where you can find the coverage of LDS issues, the coverage of Mormons in various media outlets. My research on the press releases is my conclusion, let's say my summary of the press releases. I categorize different topics that the press releases touch upon in the last 10 years, since 1997. I found 7 headlines where the church kind of touched upon in the news releases. The first one is church news. It is primarily targeted at the members, and it has relevance to non-members as well. It talks about new callings, appointments, dedications of different buildings, temples, open houses, missionary news, events and service information to the public, Christmas service, or the events going on in the Temple Square. And it also talks about the birthdays, deaths, commemorations, and memorial services for especially prominent LDS figures. The second headline or topic is the holiday messages. You usually find messages on Christmas and Easter. The third one is regarding the media. It is clarifications, corrections, and critique on publications and audiovisual media concerning the church, its members, its doctrine, and practices. The fourth type of topic is the statements, especially by the First Presidency, on select public policy matters, what the church calls the moral issues, examples, alcohol consumption and advertisement, gambling, abortion, same-sex relations and marriage, adoption, family, pornography, equal rights amendment, education, child abuse, and so on and so forth. The fifth type of topics covered in the press releases is related to everyday politics, and the principle of political neutrality of the church is reinforced and stressed majority of the times. And then the sixth type is issues regarding the corporate interest of the church. It might be copyright protection issues, the nonprofit benefit, organization benefits, the corporate status of the church, the charitable deductions, property rights, economic activities, especially in Utah, in Salt Lake downtown, and some legal issues. The case of Main Street Plaza is a good example. And the last type of topic that we find in the press releases is the interfaith relations and the community and social issues. What the church tries to portray in these press releases is kind of promoting an accurate, positive, and mainstream image for the church. The best example of this kind of an approach is the emphasis on the correct use of the name of the church. The media is often asked to use the seven-word long version of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints with a small d, and after that, the church recommends the media to use either the LDS Church or the Church, after first using the full official name. For the members, Latter-day Saints is preferred, but it is okay to also call them the Mormon, but the preference is on Latter-day Saints. But there is no Mormon church according to the official stance of the church. You do not call it the Mormon church, you call it the official name. Mormonism is okay to use if it is used in reference to the combination of doctrine, culture, and lifestyle unique to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And the First Presidency letter, a First Presidency letter, reminds the revealed name of the church to the members and stresses the importance of proclaiming the name of the Savior throughout the world. There are a few reasons why the church ardently highlights the full official name. First, I think it is a response to the belief and propaganda against the church being a Christian church. So if you look at the official logo since 1994, Jesus Christ, the name Jesus Christ, is written in bigger fonts than the rest of the name. And the second thing is the church kind of aims to distance itself and the members from other claims who also, from other groups who also claim to be Mormons, such as the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or FLDS, the Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, RLDS, or Community of Christ, and the other offshoots or splinter groups. And the name, official name, was especially emphasized during the Olympics to inform and advise the international media. There are some other certain issues that keep appearing in the press releases. Some of these are the polygamy issue, the priesthood of blacks, Mountain Meadows Massacre, Mormons versus other Christians, Utah politics, and Mormon politicians and their relationship with the institutional church. The obviously, polygamy issue has been an enduring issue for the Mormon Church, for the LDS Church. The Warren Jeffs, his charges, he's being charged for arranging underage marriage, how it made to the news, how it appeared in the media, the HBO series, The Big Love. It also got some reaction from the church. The official critique of the church was on three points, on three main fronts for against the HBO series Big Love. First is it is making polygamy a source of entertainment, which according to the church minimizes the seriousness of that problem and adds to the suffering of the victims, especially emotional and physical child and wife abuse. The second thing is the church strongly opposes the concept of fundamentalist Mormon. Those are kind of antithetical to each other. You cannot put those two things in the same phrase. There is no such a thing as fundamentalist Mormon. And then the last point is the church argues that the series does not do more than reinforcing the stereotypes about the Latter-day Saints, and there is obviously disapproval of the sexuality, coarse humor, and foul language. The question of priesthood of African Americans, it appeared in many news articles, and the church, as you all know, has this 1978 official policy where all Wharton members of the church may be ordained to priesthood without regard for race or color, but there are still ongoing demands from certain African American communities for an apology from the church, but the church says 1978 official declaration is sufficient and speaks for itself. The Mountain Meadows Massacre is one of the darkest moments in Utah's history. There is a dispute between scholars about the extent to which the LDS leadership was complicit in the massacre. The church acknowledged the wrongdoings of some members and local leadership, yet denies any direct involvement of Brigham Young and other top leadership. But most recently, as a sign of good faith, the church tried to reconcile with the descendants of the victims, especially the Mountain Meadows Association, offered prayer and healing, and restored and maintained the monument at the site. A good example of what kind of things the church takes issue with in the media is the Newsweek story on September 10, 2001, entitled Mormons. I'm going to give you a couple of quotations from that news story where the church took issues and issued a correction statement as a form of press release. One is zero tolerance for homosexuality. Second, business in Salt Lake is done the Mormon way or not at all. Readiness to press their temperance code on non-Mormon citizens. The church hopes to emphasize what Mormons share with historic Christianity, not what makes them different. Mormon rhetoric is becoming more overtly evangelical. The stress on grace and forgiveness of sins and on Jesus as atoning savior of the world sounds almost Methodist or even Southern Baptist. Mormons consider theirs the only church of Jesus Christ. All others are apostate. Mormons have the only church structured like a corporation. Almost every member of the Salt Lake hierarchy is a successful, politically conservative businessman. When young Americans began experimenting with drugs and dropping out, Mormons began advertising their abstemious purity code. There will be reporters wondering what lies behind the church's many veils. So the public affairs department takes this as an opportunity to kind of reiterate the official position of the church in doctrinal issues. It kind of tempers the sharp language in the story where we find in many media articles, and it kind of softens the rhetoric rather than, you know, completely falsifying or denying these statements. In the case of homosexuality, it says, the church does not hate any people of a particular sexual orientation, but just like everyone else, they should also be subject to the God-given rule of conduct. The apostasy issue is seen as an overstatement, and the church believes there may be good and truth in other religions as well, but still the LDS church is the only true church of Christ. In general, the church does not like to be compared or likened to evangelical churches. The distinctiveness of the LDS doctrine is always emphasized. And these are the doctrinal issues. The second type of issues in this news article example is related to the social issues. The influence of the church on liquor laws, economic life, and the youth are all-time favorites for the journalists because they make good coverage and good sell, and they are controversial in nature. The church is obviously aware of the fact that no journalist will write a story exactly as the church sees things. However, the public image, the representatives challenge anything that may contribute to the view that the church is intolerant or it has an out of the mainstream doctrine or it dominates the social life or it is secretive in its functioning. These are kind of the four or five important issues that the church tries to overcome with in the media or in the public culture. And this is what I call continuing education through public relations. The public affairs department, the church, tries, uses these different examples, coverages, as a window of opportunity to educate the public, and again to repeat its official version of the doctrine or the how it sees different issues. There are some other examples of acts or examples of developments that the church uses as a positive to promote a positive public image. One of them is the coverage of humanitarian aid, disaster relief, and social programs by the church. This kind of gives an image to the public that the church does good works not only for its members, but for the society as a whole and for the world as a whole. Examples come from the Church Relief Agency work during San Francisco earthquake, most recently Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. And these were some important tools for the church to bring the Mormons to the media in a positive manner and to attract the public attention and introduce Americans to the LDS Church from first-hand experience on these humanitarian situations. For example, the many residents of Mississippi remember Mormons from their Mormon Helping Hands t-shirts or the other title during the relief effort, Joining Hands as Neighbors and Now Friends. There are also many countries cited in the news releases where the church contributed to humanitarian and aid and disaster relief, from Kosovo to Zimbabwe to Russia to North Korea to Indonesia to Iraq. We see lots of countries being mentioned. The Mormon Tabernacle Choir and the General Conferences are also two other significant foundations since the early times of the church to outreach to the public in terms of the messages and also to give them an experience of what kind of things the Mormons do. So these are two other important tools for the church to promote a positive image and to create warm relations. Speaking of warm relations, we see some gestures made towards other faiths. The LDS Church does not organize or arrange exclusively interfaith meetings, but they support interfaith meetings when it is organized by other groups. And there are examples where the church had a message after September 11th encouraging people respect for the Islamic faith. There is an example for the condolence for Pope John Paul II or congratulations for the new Pope, Benedict XVI. There is condolence for the death of Mother Teresa. And these all make sense from a public relations perspective, especially if you think about the presence and growth of the LDS Church in Latin America. There are examples where there were all Spanish Christmas celebrations in church buildings. And the last thing that I'm going to talk about these press releases is the public policy issues which the church takes positions on. The church defines these as moral issues. In a letter from the First Presidency, it is stated that the First Presidency and the 12 reserve the authority to declare a particular issue to be a moral issue and worthy of full institutional involvement. Elsewhere, the church refers to public interest, public health, public safety, and welfare, and welfare of the church and its members as grounds for church involvement. And the church even goes further to base this on a constitutional ground, saying that it is a constitutional and moral obligation within the democratic process in a pluralistic society. We all know that the liquor laws is a chief issue that the church openly took positions, hired registered lobbies, and delivered testimonies in the state of Utah. In terms of direct political involvement, we see the principle of political neutrality, but there are examples where the church took a position in the case of flat tax in Utah, opposed the idea of flat tax, or at least it should be made not obligatory, or it should be given the charitable donations should be kept, the church said, and obviously it is in the best interest of the church and its members. The vouchers, education vouchers, the church did not take any position. But we need to say that the church does not influence politics or public opinion not only by taking positions, but also by not taking any positions. Not only by what it says, but also by what it doesn't say. In that sense, I would call the LDS Church position conservative but mainstream. It tries to, or it is the image that they try to promote. It tries to stay away from militant or activist stance in politics. So there is a clear line between the Christian right and the LDS. In the case of abortion, the church is opposed to abortion. It's pro-life, but at the same time, it did not support any public demonstration or any legislation, for that matter, concerning abortion. It did not take any position against embryonic stem cell research. It did not take any position against capital punishment. And it is against euthanasia, but it did not support the idea of maintaining the artificial means of life support, where people have a condition of a worsening condition where there is no really hope in terms of coming back. So unlike many, you know, evangelical or Christian right groups, LDS Church kind of gave this image to the public that, yes, they are conservative, but at the same time, they are more flexible and they are more understanding in terms of the exceptions that are to be made for these different moral issues. And I think religions, they influence politics and public opinion by what they do and what they say. And this is, I think, is a good example of a church, a hierarchical, well-organized church, taking official positions on certain matters and staying away from taking positions in many others. Thank you for your attention.
I'd like to thank you, Terry, very much for giving us a wonderful historical overview of the public relations arm of the church. It's interesting to see, especially from a different perspective, how all of these pieces come together. As I teach some in the public relations area in my role as an organizational communication instructor, and I get some interesting ideas and some interesting information about how internal and external public relations machinery and ideas are presented to both the inside and the outside of the organizations that public relations arms work for. And what I'd like to do today is just simply ask some questions and perhaps bring up some ideas that might further the research in this area, not really as a response, but perhaps as something that might continue the look at this really vital area of our church or of the church. And the whole idea of looking at this particular area in quite a bit of minute detail, I think, is an important part of our study of the LDS Church. Not because it's just one area that deserves some interest, but mostly because it is the area that other people and other institutions and the press will see. It creates the image of the church, and the first thing I have to say is that that's not a particularly surprising point of view. Public relations in the last 25 years has very much been a whole industry dedicated to image management. And I think the biggest question that LDS members have is, maybe two questions. A, first, should the church have a business-like public relations arm that is so completely and utterly in charge of the image of the church? And secondly, what should that image be? And I think that Atui is getting to some really interesting ideas here when he's looking at the public relations and the public releases that have been made over the last 25 years. And what I would suggest is that he also look at who makes up the public relations arm of the church. Who are they? Are they, we know that in the last few years that the major public relations planning has been farmed out to a New York firm. But who are they? Are they members? Are the people that take care of the day-to-day operations of the public relations in Salt Lake City for the church? Who are they? Are they professionals? How much influence does the First Presidency have in their day-to-day operations? How do they determine what these issues are that need to be crafted? The entire website for the LDS churches, it deserves a rhetorical analysis in and of itself. It's a magnificent, by the way, website, as websites go. And it's, I think, the reason why there are so many anti-Mormon websites that are incredibly strong and very active for one reason, because the LDS website, LDS.org, is such an incredibly effective public relations device in and of itself. I'd like to ask, in this regard, in the same thing, I love the ideas that Atui has about the, what's not being said. What are the things that aren't being given to us in the press releases? I also find it really interesting in the newsroom part of the website that just recently we got a little blurb about how general authorities are not infallible, something that we thought maybe those of us in the present-day church might never see. I would like to make one, just one claim about the public relations business of the church, and that I wonder if Atui could just, perhaps he could answer or respond to, and that is that I think that like many big corporations, and there was some in the paper some allusion to this, public relations changes the nature of the organization. That's not too difficult to understand in many ways, but when it's a church, that's kind of important because there are eternal doctrines, eternal truths that one wonders if it's a good idea to be messing around with those. And particularly, I think there are three that have been altered in the last 25 years. And I think that they have been purposefully altered, but mostly by the public relations management, just as Atui has been talking about. The first one is obviously a distancing from polygamy, and yet polygamy remains on the books, and there are, good reasons to move away from polygamy, but I don't see a great deal of interest in jettisoning the Doctrine and Covenants section regarding polygamy or the eternal principle of celestial marriage, and yet there are young people in the church who have no idea what celestial marriage is outside of being married in the temple, which is a very, I think, preliminary aspect of that doctrine. The second one is the infallibility of the prophet worship, general authority worship. There's, I believe, a good deal less emphasis in the church management of news about individual revelation than there is regarding revelation from these individuals. I think that's been a purposeful public relations campaign that it's been very, very effective. And I think if you asked most mainstream Mormons who they would believe their own individual revelations from God or the prophet, I would be betting that almost 100% would say, well, even if they were in those two sources were in conflict, I'd have to believe the prophet. That's what I've been taught. That has been, I think, a consistent message from the internal public relations campaign. And the third one, I think, is the most disturbing. I think that there has been a deliberate moving away from eternal progression as a distinctive doctrine of the church. That, in fact, I think President Hinckley has in himself as And we have to remember that he was, as was mentioned, a public relations executive. That was his profession before he was a full-time member of the priest of the church's hierarchy. Then, you know, purposefully, I think that President Hinckley has, especially in the last 20 years, moved away from even discussing eternal progression. Now, we could come up with all kinds of reasons why we think that he might be doing that, so he could be more mainstream, as was mentioned, to be more conservative, to be more acceptable, to get more people as members of the church. But the point is that I think that it has really diluted that distinctive Mormon doctrine to the point that we are confused about it. When President Hinckley says, well, we really don't know too much about that, and he says this in a national forum, we really know very much about that whole idea of progression. You know, that was just a little couplet that Lorenzo Snow said, as man is now, God once was. We really don't spend a lot of time and effort worrying about that. I think that that changes the nature of our theology, which is already kind of a little loosey-goosey as it is. So when we have the public relations arms of the church actually determining what doctrine might be and changing doctrine by their very very deliberate program, it seems to me, of what they do say and what they don't say, then I think maybe it's not just an exercise in understanding what the public relations does for the church. It's also a warning to us to pay more attention to that and to say, is this a good thing? Is this, first of all, do we have anything to do about it? Might be a good question to ask. But I'm wondering, is the church dramatically changing its theology because of public relations efforts? And I guess that would be the question that I would ask our speaker today, and I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Becky, for your valuable insights and comments. I'm not terribly familiar with the doctrine, but I can see how the doctrine is being modified or presented in a different way when the church rhetoric is in front of the public attention. So. The question of polygamy and how it is still in the book or in the doctrine, that there was this question about celestial polygamy. There was this session about celestial polygamy in the temple work. And Elder Oaks, I think, responded that he doesn't know what it means to have to be sealed to more than one wife when there is the issue of divorce. So I think, you know, there is this when the officials are in front of public, there is this kind of motivation to appear or to appeal to them without necessarily disturbing their certain values. And at the same time, I think there are clear implications that the doctrine is being presented in a different way, if not modified, and that in the end I think might kind of force the general authorities to clarify certain doctrine issues where there are lots of different views. So I'm not sure how long this might last, to have these answers of I don't know or we don't know the exact nature. There might be, I think, more clarifications coming up in the coming years or so.
Thanks to both speakers, participants here for these valuable insights. We have a few minutes left for questions. I would like to just pose a couple of things. One is just a sort of a rhetorical question. As I listened to both of these presentations, this is the question that kept going through my mind, and I think it really goes beyond what Edgar has attempted to do in his paper, but I think it's a wonderful field, as Becky has suggested, for further exploration. And that's simply the question: how much of present-day members' perception of their own church and doctrine comes by way of the public relations department, as opposed to coming from ecclesiastical leaders and over the pulpit? I think that's a very, very important, significant issue, and maybe Becky will have some idea. I wouldn't even know where you'd begin to try to analyze that. It's way out there. A more specific question that I would like to present to Edgar in his sort of comparative study. Edgar, are you aware of any other entity, especially if it were in the Islamic world, that you could say is comparable or analogous to what the Mormon Church has in its public relations department? Have you ever found a similar animal out there?
Actually, my thesis is a comparison of LDS Church public relations and an Islamic movement called the Gulen movement from Turkey. They are not obviously identical in terms of many doctrinal issues, in terms of their organization. So the Gulen movement is more loosely connected, but there is a clear hierarchy of whose opinion counts more than others. So it is a social movement. It has very similar goals and very similar outlook to the world in terms of the idea of Latter-day times, how there is renovation of the existing doctrine or reinterpretation of the existing doctrine. The local administration, the organization is very similar. And in terms of public relations, the Gulen movement specifically organizes interfaith dialogue activities, and they find this as a way to gain legitimacy in the eyes of the general public by promoting a tolerant, open to dialogue kind of an image. So in that sense, there are some similarities, but the in terms of institutional coherence and hierarchy, it is very difficult to find something comparable to LDS Church, because there is really no clergy or general authorities in the case of Sunni Islam, which is about 85 to 90%.
Does anyone, Kim, come up to the microphone, please, and then Bill.
I'm, of course, grateful to hear Becky raise the question of the influence of the PR movement or PR sensitivities on doctrine. I think I don't expect it to be... It's not that the PR department issued President Hinckley's statement about, or whatever it was, response to Larry King, but that he himself did. And as I was listening to that, I was struck with the sort of PR sensibilities that he brings to the thing. And then, having been prepared by that unfortunate experience, in my view, when he was speaking about war, and about the Iraq War in particular, my impression was that he wanted to say things that felt comfortable to Americans, that such a drive of the church, the drive to be acceptable, to not stick out, to feel familiar.
The code word is, we are not weird.
We are not weird. And when there's tremendous societal pressure to attack somebody or to be afraid of somebody, to preach peace, to renounce war, feels weird. And I wonder whether anybody has any sense that, I mean, I've heard that he regrets having taken the position that he took. But it was clear to me that he was saying, you know, that this is part, he said, this is part of the war on terror, which it was not, to attack Iraq. And I wonder, you know, where he's getting his lines from and why, whether we are going to be dragged morally as well as doctrinally into doing what everybody else does.
Any thoughts on that?
Unlike many other churches, the LDS Church did not take the question of war as a moral question. So it is not one of the moral issues that the LDS Church takes a clear position on. In that sense, I would say patriotism and being at the center of American political system has more influence than the morality issue when it comes to war. The Catholics, many other left-leaning Christian churches, they took more pacifist positions, but LDS Church even did not sign certain documents where different churches come together in order to protest the war in general or in the case of the war in Iraq.
I would say that that's kind of an understatement. In fact, that it's just the very, very much so that Hinckley was supporting the war, and in fact has supported the government in almost anything that it has done in the last 20, 25 years, except attack the institution of religion and the church in particular. This presents all kinds of moral difficulties for the church, and yet, if Hinckley is regretting or backtreading any kinds of feelings about the war in Iraq, it hasn't been greatly presented to the whole of the church. And I think we had a session yesterday that was very, very good in demonstrating that, for the most part, Mormons have supported the war. They have supported every war, and the fact that they are incredibly proud of that, and that this has not been a place where Mormons have taken a moral stand in any way. But it would be, boy, it sure would be an interesting and incredible tactic for them to do so.
So I just want to say war is a moral issue and so is torture. And the fact that we haven't condemned
these. I absolutely agree.
For either one of you, in 2000 there was Proposition 22 in California involving gay rights at least there was evidence that the church put some real pressure on people to contribute money, to put up yard signs, and to vote, and so forth. Did the church? Two possibilities occur to me. Did the church admit they had done this and defend it on the basis of it's a moral issue and we moral issue rather than a political candidate or party, or did they just deny that they were involved at all, or is there some third explanation for that activity or non-activity?
As far as I know, the church was quite open in terms of supporting these amendments, and they also were quite open to encourage the membership to take an active part in these campaigns. So when something is defined as a moral issue, they do not necessarily see this as being an involvement in everyday politics. The Equal Rights Amendment was another example where the church was very influential even outside of Utah to support the campaign.
Well, I just want to comment on both of those statements because I've been very involved in both. And although the church took a very open position on both of those issues, they denied and denied and denied their direct involvement. And specifically on the night issue, they raised tens of thousands of dollars in California and specifically denied doing it until KUER in Salt Lake City, did a story on it and was able to acquire an actual fundraising document. And the public relations department completely stonewalled that the reporter that was doing it, and I know because I talked to her directly, and they denied doing it, and then finally she was able to obtain the letter that directed the fundraising, and then at that point they admitted their involvement, but they did not do it until they were forced to do it by the facts.
Thank you both to our participants and our audience. That finishes our session for now. Let's thank our speakers one more time. Thank you.